FM News Talk 97.1. On-demand audio.
And last night, the Republican Party defied history to expand our Senate majority while significantly beating expectations in the House.
What a day. The president yesterday following up the day after the election with a couple of blockbusters. First of all, blocking Jim Acosta from the White House and then basically firing Jeff Sessions. And endorsing Nancy Pelosi all in one day, a regular day in the life of President Donald Trump, it seemed like. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Glad that you're back with us. We continue to follow this tragic situation out in California, where some nut job went into a country western bar, threw a smoke bomb from what reports seem to be, and then opened fire on people with a handgun. If you include the shooter, who they believe took his own life, and a police officer who entered the scene first and was shot, or a total of 13 people dead in this shooting. And they still don't have a motive. They haven't identified who did it. They haven't ruled out terrorism from what I've heard. They're still really in the middle of this investigation. If we get any updates during this show, of course, we'll quickly bring those to you. Hey, still ahead this morning, we're going to talk to folks from the Media Research Center. They've kind of parsed out some of the media coverage of the election leading up to it, and we're going to get their thoughts on that. At the top of the hour, at around in an hour from now, at about 8:10, we're going to talk to Trish Regan, who's the host of course, Trish Regan Primetime. And it'll be good to get her back on the air since she moved to that primetime slot. Lots going on now. And, of course, Chris Wallace, who played a big role in election coverage over the last couple of days. Wow. Lots to parse out. A couple of races that haven't even been decided yet. In all three of them, Republicans have apparently won. Democrats have all hired attorneys and are challenging the results. The governor's race in Georgia, the Senate race in Florida, and the Senate race in Arizona are all still up in the air. It looks like a net gain of one Republican governorship and two Republican senators. But the challengers refuse to give up at this point, and we'll see what happens with that. We'll keep talking about it. Right now, let's get to our guest, please. Former Missouri Senator Jim Talent, now with the Bipartisan Policy Center, bipartisanpolicy.org. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Mark. You know, one of the things I like about you is how polite you are. You know, she said, let's get to our guest, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got Zach in here. If it was Trish, I just would have ordered her to do it. But, you know, how I am. I'm just kidding. That's a joke.
I mean, you're a unique for a radio host. Rarely do people say please.
Well, thank you. Thank you for
raised right.
I appreciate you pointing that out. My mama thanks you. That's for sure. Are you all recovered from election night? I mean, you played a big role as well in a lot of these this effort to get Josh Hawley elected.
Yeah, I mean, I always get, no matter how many of these things I go through, I get nervous the night before and what I call the day of. You know, that was always the hardest day for me, the day of, because there wasn't a whole lot you could do, and you just waited to see the verdict of the people. And but when it's over, you know, you learn to move on pretty quickly, because there'll be another election in 2 years, and people will be talking about it before you know it. So we'll be into the next cycle very quickly. And there are no, I mean, let me just assure your listeners of all persuasions, there are no permanent victories and no permanent defeats, okay? No matter what anybody tells you.
Right.
There aren't. What? And I don't usually write a political column, but if I get some time, I may write on this, because people who talk about, okay, we're now in a paradigm where the Republicans can't win X or the Democrats can't win Y, and then next cycle, the Republicans will win X and the Democrats will win Y, and everybody will say we're in a new paradigm. So, you know, the country's divided. We've gone back and forth, and I think we're going to continue doing it for a while.
Yeah, well, you have to be of a certain age to remember the early 90s when Democrats had ironclad control of the state of Missouri, right? And now look how that's turned around.
Yeah, we've been in an era of pretty closely divided politically a country for 25 years now, and that's because the voters are the boss, and there isn't a solid, sustainable majority on behalf of one party or the other, which there was in on the Washington level for like 40 years, and there isn't. And so we go back and forth. And
yeah.
So I just help. One of the things I don't like is people, when they get really involved in politics, they tend to either be euphoric or in despair. And it just is not a reflection of reality.
A bit earlier, I had Tim Jones on. We were talking about an article that, of all things, is in the Post-Dispatch today. And it was written by Kurt Erickson. And the title is, As Missouri Turns Red, Democrats Search for Relevance. And it basically goes in and talks to Bruce Franks and a bunch of people talking about why just about every county in Missouri turned red and supported supported Josh Hawley against Claire McCaskill, and they seem to be searching for the reason as to why that happened and wondering why Democrats can't seem to make any gains in Missouri. Getting back to your point, I mean, it 20 years ago, it wasn't like that.
That's a responsible process for Democratic influencers and leaders to go through now, is to say, okay, what is it we need to do? We don't want to compromise our convictions, but what is it we can do to gain more consistent approval from the boss, the voters, right? And that's a really good process for them to go through. It's a healthy one, and they don't need my advice, but I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so, I offered him some advice. Add a little bit of common sense and logic to your proposals, and you might have a chance of getting elected.
Well, of course, that's how I feel, but I wouldn't. But the other thing about it is, when you've lost an election, and I ran 11 times, I lost twice. You gain some empathy for how people feel when they lose. And I don't, I really just personally don't rub it in because I've been on the other side.
Sure.
Okay.
No,
and
I understand.
They worked hard too and ran hard and believed strongly in what they think is right for the people. And I, you know, I honor that certly on a personal level. I'm glad Josh Hawley won, but I've known Claire McCaskill for almost 35 years, and I'm sure she's smarting right now, and I feel for her.
Well, you know, Jim, the thing I brought this up earlier, and I wanted to talk to Tim Jones about it, and I didn't get a chance, but what a what an irony in the state of Missouri that voters went out by a 6-point margin, much larger than anybody thought, and they hired Josh Hawley to be their next senator. A conservative by any standard, you know, a constitutionalist, all of this stuff. And the same people that voted, I think there were about 2.3 or 4 million votes in that Senate race. Those same votes went down the ballot on these amendment issues like minimum wage and Amendment 1, which would redistrict the entire state. And they approved those as well. I mean, those seem to be contrary votes to me.
Well, you know, I would say that when you think about things like Mark, or like that, Mark, I would decide what your general approach to the voters is going to be. Now, mine has been, I think I've said this on the show, I think voters, as a group, act rationally in terms of how they define their interests. One of the things you got to remember is, although they're the boss, they make the ultimate decision. It's not a job interview because they're not going out and choosing from among 15 different candidates to get the one who checks all the boxes they want, right? They get a choice, generally speaking, of two people. And so for the voters in the middle, the soft voters, and those voters can be different depending on the election, right? They're different voters in the middle from election to election. They're voting for somebody, almost by definition, about whom they have some doubts, right? But they feel they're better than the other person. And so it doesn't necessarily, that person's views on everything don't necessarily represent their views on everything. It's a judgment that balances a lot of different variables, okay? But it's a rational judgment in my view. I mean, even the elections I lost, I could go back and say, you know what, if I'm intellectually honest about it, I get it. Okay, when I lost the reelect in 2006, the voters in the middle were determined to send a message to President Bush on the war, and they did it by defeating a lot of his party members in the Congress. I got that. I understood it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was very rational, and he changed his approach to the war after that, too, and it got a lot better in Iraq pretty quickly. So, you know, again, this is the system working. I just don't want people to feel like we're in some huge crisis. I think my greater concerns about the country are not political, but rather the cultural differences and the fact that people on either side of the cultural divide are tending to demonize those in the other side. And that's, to me, the problem, okay? When you make disagreements personal across a broad range of issues, and it's that's a problem.
But you know, last night Tucker Carlson from Fox News, some Antifa group went to his house and protested outside and chanted while his wife and kids, I assume, were inside. Assuming they had the address right, they put out his address. Sean Hannity's address, a few other people's home addresses on social media, threatened them, all because they disagree with their point of view. These are people that refer to themselves as Antifa, who supposedly are opposed to fascism, which is all about shutting down the ideas of your opponents. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and it's the problem is it's not only tolerated, it's if not endorsed, at least tacitly approved by influencers,
right,
by responsible
right.
people. And right. there's some of that on both sides, Mark, and it's not a good thing. I mean, personally, people have a right to engage in peaceful protest, for example, and orderly protest. I will stand up to the death for their right to do that. But I really wish people would start asking themselves how effective that is today, as opposed to the 60s, in actually persuading people. I think it tends to turn people off. I think they'd be better off, again, on both sides, by saying, you know, how do we actually appeal to people who maybe have some sympathy but don't agree with us on everything? And I don't think you're doing that by going out and holding up a bunch of signs and ranting, and even if when you're staying within the law. You have a right to do it.
Yeah.
But I question the effectiveness of it in today's climate. I think people are turned off by it. And they, you know, prefer to see a little bit more actual engagement on the actual issues.
Well, one of the decision makers who's been, you know, tacitly approving of that is about to be in charge of the Financial Services Committee in the House, which is Maxine Waters, right? I mean, she's
Maxine
been encouraging people to...
Things, yeah. Maxine has said a lot of things that are irresponsible. Now, again, part of this is, you know, the politicians are, to some extent, going to reflect where their partisan base is coming from, but you need to resist that impulse and sort of maneuver around it rather than give into it. And let's see what happens now that she's going to have that gavel. I you know, I'm hopeful that she will tone it down.
You know, I said earlier that Claire McCaskill wrote a book claiming that she basically helped pick her opponent in 2012, which was Todd Akin. She and I watched President Trump's news conference yesterday where he earnestly endorsed Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House, and I couldn't help but to think that he was wisely choosing an opponent he thought he could beat.
You know, I saw that too. Either that or because I think that Congresswoman Pelosi is going to be chosen as the Speaker, and he may have been simply saying, look, I accept the results of the election. Let's talk about where we can work together. And I think she said some things to that effect as well. And I think that's a healthy process. And there are areas there were already. I mean, I'll tell you one big area, Mark, and I've been very pleased at how the executive and the legislative have worked together is the president's mobilizing the United States across a broad range of areas in the national competition with China. And Congress has been very supportive. And this is hugely important, both economically and from a security standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think there are issues like that. You know, I have a friend who says you can't just fight the darkness. You have to light a candle. So part of this, if we want to moderate the tone, okay, part of this is not just controlling yourself where you disagree, but actively seeking areas where you legitimately agree. And when people work together on a project that they agree on, it's a lot harder than to turn around and jam the knife, you know, in between somebody's eyeballs on an issue where they disagree on.
It'll be interesting to see Nancy Pelosi turn away from some of the rhetoric we heard during the election and actually work with Republicans to get something done. I still am on the side of the It's going to be nothing but obstruction for the next 2 years.
Well, Mark, small steps, okay? Yeah. And this is what she and the president should be looking for. Is, okay, what can we do? Take a small step and see if the other person responds. Don't go way out on a limb. Don't be, you know, don't invite the other person to, you know, stick it to you. But let's see some small steps and see if the other side responds.
Well,
that's what I do.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. So in the meantime, okay, yeah. in the meantime, here in Missouri, Josh Hawley is the senator-elect. Somebody's going to have to take his place in the attorney general's office. Governor Parson will be making that appointment at some point. I've heard Eric Schmidt's name mentioned for that. I heard Jay Ashcroft's name mentioned for that. And the Missouri Scout mentioned a lady named Brenda Talent yesterday when I looked at their report. Can you comment on that?
I think her husband might be a liability if she was in public office. But, you know, she has... I shouldn't say this publicly, but she has enormous abilities. I don't know that she's very happy at the Show Me Institute and doing an awful lot of good work. So I don't know whether she'd feel that's the right career move, but it's an honor, I'm sure, for her to be mentioned in this context.
Yeah.
She's a great lawyer. She's a better lawyer than I ever was, I'll tell you that.
Well, we wish her the best if that ends up being what happens. I was very pleased to see that yesterday when I read that.
Well, Jim, if that were to happen, and I don't think it is, I will use my influence so that you're the first person who interviews her.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Jim. Thank you. Clearly, she has great taste in spouses, too. So,
well, I kind of think so, but... Her mother would probably disagree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my mother-in-law, too. I'm with you. All right, Senator Talent, thanks so much for your time today.
Okay.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Bipartisanpolicy.org and at Jim Talent on Twitter if you want to follow him there. How about that? Maybe a little bit of breaking news there. We'll get the first interview. Those are three of the people mentioned. I don't know who else is on the list, but you could really have some moving around. I mean, Parson, who just got... He took over office after Greitens, so not elected as governor, has appointed the lieutenant governor. He would then appoint the attorney general. If he moved Schmidt, he would have to appoint a treasurer on top of that. Or if he moved Ashcroft, he'd have to appoint a secretary of state on top of that. There's lots of moving parts to that. And I'm just mentioning names that I've read publicly that have been mentioned. So anyway.